This is Jim Inkster. Coming today, a busy show, Nina Sankovich. Her book is Signed, Sealed, Delivered, Celebrating the Joys of Letter Writing. Also on the show is Jesse Allison, LSU professor, and he will talk about a major event coming this way this weekend. It's the Red Stick Future Fest. We will talk with Dr. Allison regarding another highlight in our community. Also on the show, busy week at the legislature and lots of maneuvering going on. We had Ben Nevers on the show a few days ago, and the senator got his bill to incorporate Governor Jindal's America Next plan into a new Medicaid proposal. Got it through committee, and we'll see where it goes, and we'll talk about this a bit. And Paul Nacan has won his case at the Supreme Court level. He was challenging Steve Myers on housing in Baton Rouge. We'll talk about that as well. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside our area, please call 877-217-5757, and you may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We start with Jesse Allison. He is a professor of experimental music and digital media at Louisiana State University, and this is a big week for Jesse and his crew. It is the Red Stick Future Fest. Good morning, Dr. Allison.
Good morning.
Tell us about the Red Stick Future Fest.
So we have this event that we're hosting at the Center for Computation and Technology down at LSU, which is an exhibition and then a bunch of performances in a theater called FutureCasts that are dealing with all sorts of, any place that technology touches society. So interactive technologies, laptop orchestras, digital art, just exhibitions of all sorts of things that fall into those kinds of categories.
Well, it's a wave of the future in our midst at LSU, and you're on the cutting edge of this.
Yes. In fact, the whole state is kind of on the cutting edge of this, and that's kind of the point. We were accepted to host a new Interfaces for Musical Expression, or the NIME conference, in 2015. Mm-hmm. And leading into that, it's a conference that was at Seoul 2 years ago. It's in London this summer. Next year we'll be in Baton Rouge. And a big reason for that is all of the digital media and interactive technology developments that's been happening here in the state. This Future Fest is headed towards that event next year and is showcasing the things that are going on here.
If the public at large wishes to participate and perhaps sit in on some of the sessions, what can we do?
So from 2 to 5 this Friday at the Digital Media Center on campus, you can come in and partake of all of the different things, try out things, play with the new games and all that sort of thing. And at 2:30, 3:30, and 4:30, there will be future casts in our Digital Media Center theater, which with 4K projection and 90-some speakers encompassing the space, that are showcasing the best of the best, the sort of most unique and most promising kinds of exhibits.
So some people who are in the cutting edge from other places will be in our midst.
Absolutely. We have a few speakers from the Louisiana International Film Festival are coming through to talk about some of the apps that they've been working on. EA will be speaking as well, which is also housed in that same building, actually. And then as well as people all the way across campus, collaborations between theater and engineering and mass communications and digital art and all of that.
Well, LSU has done some great things, despite the budget cuts, which have afflicted universities across our state. Your area has been one that is rising above the rest and the cream of the proverbial crop across the country. You've been at LSU how long, Jesse?
For 4 years now.
So you've been here during the midst of these budget issues that have been part of the fabric of Louisiana higher education. So next year, you'll have an even bigger event if everything goes according to form.
Oh, yes. We're definitely hosting the conference, have about 250 internationally renowned artists and researchers that will be coming and doing concerts and installations. And we've got everyone on board to have a pretty large event, including things downtown, things on campus, and it should be pretty encompassing. Pretty
so if everything goes according to your plan, what kind of an event as far as the massive attention that we are endeavoring to have, what kind of an event do you anticipate next year?
Basically, we're looking at an international digital media type of arts festival, something that pulls together all of the things that we do across the state, things in like Maker Faire, robotics, in digital music and digital art, all these things that are going on in little pockets, but basically need a place to exhibit. We're trying to bring them all together, put them into one large event, and then roll it out for the rest of the state.
Well, great. This week, that's next year. This week, it's Breadstick Future Fest, and you get started when?
2 to 5 on Friday. And
that's tomorrow.
Yep.
And for those who'd like more information, what should they do?
They can go to redstickfestival.org.
Redstickfestival.org. And Jesse Allison is the guy who's making it happen with lots of help.
Lots of help.
Well, thank you, Jesse. Good luck to you. And let's talk soon about what happened this year. And so we look ahead to an even bigger event in 2015.
Cool. Thank you.
Thank you. And we're joined now by Paul Nakan, who has been on the forefront of a legal fight with one of his neighbors, Steve Myers. And Mr. Myers has several neighbors since he owns about 50 properties in Baton Rouge. But he went to court to challenge a longstanding ordinance in Baton Rouge that states that two unrelated people cannot reside in a home if one of the more than two unrelated people cannot reside in a home if the owner is not present. And this particular case centered on one property owned by Steve Myers at 1977 Cherrydale. Now, Paul Nakan almost single-handedly led the fight for the city parish, a citizen who lives on Morning Glory, which is adjacent to Cherrydale. And today, he is savoring victory. The state Supreme Court has ruled in his favor. The district court, Judge Janice Clark, had ruled in the favor of Mr. Myers. But the Clark decision has been overturned by the Louisiana Supreme Court. I'm sure, Paul Nakan, that you are celebrating with vigor on Morning Glory this morning.
Well, Jim, this wasn't just my case. I did this for everyone in Louisiana that owns a home in A1 single-family subdivisions. And I've had a number of calls today so far, people saying, oh, Paul, golly, congratulations, you won. And my answer to all of them is, no, we have won.
I think we just lost Mr. Nakan. He says we have won, and hopefully he didn't hang up the phone after that. But he has won his case, and there are, of course, people who were cheering on Paul, but there are others who said, look, this kind of stuff is going on all across the city. Mr. Myers was singled out for prosecution. These are claims made by people because, let's face it, in our community, there are many instances in which more than two unrelated people are residing in a home, and the city parish normally doesn't go to court to take aim at an individual. But it did so in a few instances involving Myers, and now I would imagine he and other landlords will have to make a judgment on whether they will abide by the decision from the high court or whether they will openly defy it. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. Michelle Southern is producing, and hopefully we will restore contact with Paul. And I think we have Mr. Nakan back. And Paul, you were on a roll. You said that you didn't win, we won. How did we win?
Well, because I thought this for everybody that owns homes in A1 single-family subdivisions. So the Supreme Court ruling gave everybody the confidence to know that we live in A1 single-family residential areas and that they're going to be upheld, the rules and regulations of A1. So I consider not me winning, in a way me winning, but everybody that lives in A1 single-family subdivisions has won.
So are you going to keep an eye to make sure that Steve and others who own properties in your area are complying with the decision from the high court?
Not just in my area. We're going to the city, and we're going to make sure that the city upholds the rules and regulations that they have set forth decades ago to protect families and owners in A1 single family subdivisions.
Well, there was a dissent. Justice Knoll agreed with Steve Myers, and obviously this was a case in which there was a difference of opinion involving legal eagles. Judge Clark had one opinion. The Supreme Court had another, but the Supreme Court takes precedent, and I don't think this case will go to the U.S. Supreme Court. So it would appear that Steve Myers and other landlords may be going to the drawing board now and deciding what they're going to do. And you say you're going to be watching them, Paul Nockan.
Well, I'm not the only person that's going to be watching. The city and individuals that live next door. There's a house on East Lakeshore Drive right in the middle of some beautiful homes. The front yard and backyard is a parking lot. Those people that live there are going to be getting on to making sure that all of this is cleared up. I'm not going to be getting everything cleared up in their area. It's up to many landowners to report and make sure that the city upholds the rules and regulations of A1 and gets everything back to normal.
You sound like a man on a mission.
Well, I am. And there are a lot of other people out there that have been waiting to hear this ruling. And I've already talked to a few of them that have called. And they're getting ready to start making calls. And one of them this morning said that he's planning on calling John Delgado, our councilman in our area, to see exactly how he feels about this and what he's going to do to help also.
Arthur in City Park. Arthur, you're on the air with Paul Nockan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I just like clarification as to what the problem is exactly.
Well, the case involves Steve Myers and, by extension, any other landlord renting to people who are unrelated, three or more people living in the same dwelling in Baton Rouge, unless you own the property. That's a no-no. You're violating a city ordinance. So we know this is going on in a lot of places, but so far Myers and maybe a few others are the only ones who have been prosecuted. And of course, Paul Nockan is cheering on and saying, let's go after everybody.
I see. Okay, so it's a family issue?
Yes.
I just don't understand where its trouble comes in.
It's what constitutes a family and who can live in a dwelling in a neighborhood, a very nice one like Paul lives in. Paul says this has cluttered up the neighborhood, and he doesn't like it, and he's won his case before the state Supreme Court.
All right. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you. 297-5633, Charles on North Foster. Charles, you are on the air with Mr. Nockan.
Good morning, Jimmy. Good morning to you. Yes. I would be surprised if this is over. I see a federal case looming, and it's probably going to happen quickly. And the problem is this: that ordinance, when it was written, I don't think it was intended for times like these. I think it was intended to keep a certain population outside of certain communities, and that in and of itself is troubling. But my question, to a greater degree, is this: if a landowner cannot do what he wants with his property in conservative Louisiana, well, what does that say about, I guess, our society at large? But I definitely see a federal court battle coming. I'll hang up and listen.
All right. What do you say, Paul? Are we going to go to the Supreme? Are we going to go to the big Supreme Court on this one?
I don't believe it's going to go there. The A1 single family designation is all over the United States. And it was set up just like they set up commercial developments. You got C1 commercial, C2 commercial. You have A1 single family. Then you have sections where you have condominiums, apartments, and everything. They don't build apartments and condominiums in the middle of Bocage subdivision in Baton Rouge or Jefferson Place. There are rules and regulations to protect all the people that buy their property and build their homes, knowing that they're going to be living in the middle of a bunch of other families and not having a drugstore next to them or an apartment complex next.
All right, we've got to take a short break, and we shall return in 90 seconds with a fired up and victorious Paul Nockan. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we thank Mr. Paul Nockan for joining us on short notice. He lost at the district court level as Judge Clark ruled in favor of Steve Myers in this case involving the city parish and housing in Baton Rouge. But the Supreme Court has ruled in favor of Paul Nockan, overturning Judge Clark's decision. The city parish alleged that more than two unrelated persons were residing in a home owned by Myers at 1977 Cherrydale, and this it was in violation, according to the city parish, and now according to the Supreme Court, of an ordinance that has been declared constitutional by the Supreme Court, which overturned Judge Clark's decision. Paul Nockan with us for a bit longer, and Michelle, can you tell me who is on the next line? We've got a few people waiting in line, and I'd like to take them in order if possible. So Paul Nockan is, of course, savoring victory from his perch at on Morning Glory. Russ at Perkins Row. Russ, good morning. You're on
the air. I have a question for your guest. If a man and a woman are living together, they are not married, and let's say that each has a child. He has a child, she has a child. That is four people living in the house. Is that legal or illegal?
Paul, would that be legal?
They will have to call the city parish and find out about that.
Well, Steve has brought up these scenarios, and some of them do apply. Certainly, gay people who are not married and can't get married in Louisiana, they might be inordinately singled out as a result of this ruling. Rush, you sound like you're on Meyer's side on this.
A little, I suppose. But I have one other question. The state Supreme Court has ruled in Mr. Nockan's favor. Does this now have a chance to go to the Court of Appeals in Louisiana?
No. The next step would be the U.S. Supreme Court, but I think it's doubtful that the Supreme Court would hear this case. They are involved in issues that usually are of a little bigger scope, but some would say this is pretty big. Paul,
they've already had one of these cases in the United States Supreme Court, and that was used in our case in New Orleans. It was submitted to the Louisiana Supreme Court showing where the United States Supreme Court has upheld a one single family already.
2975633, Matthew on Bluebonnet. Matthew, you're on the air with Mr. Paul Nockan.
Hi, I just seems to me like the existing ordinance sometimes is characterized as a veiled attempt to keep certain types of people out of a neighborhood, but it's important to remember that it's written about people who rent, not about people who own. And so I think it's about protecting the homeowner who doesn't want to live in an area that's treated like, you know, student housing or something where it's going to disrupt the solitude, the peace, the quiet. You know, homeowners don't want to live next to people that are parking cars on the yard and having parties late into the night. Am I correct in my assumption that this is just about renters, not about owners?
Well, it's about the whole community, but certainly owners who rent now have to think about what they're going to do. And I would imagine one of the moves that is under consideration is to make these people part owners. What if they made them like 1% owners, Paul? Would that then put them in compliance with the law?
Well, again, I am not an attorney. I don't know all the legal stipulations, but the owner has to live there. They could make somebody, I guess, maybe a partial owner. But what we'll have to do to skirt that issue is to have other legislation passed to where they can't make somebody a part-time owner while they're renting the house for a year or 2 years or 3 years just to skirt this issue.
Okay. Well, you live in an area which is not far from campus, and right. I think Steve has rented to students through the years, and particularly at this location at 1977 Cherrydale. You got up in arms when he put a parking lot in there, didn't you?
Well, like I said a little while ago, right in the middle of a bunch of beautiful young families with young children, nice landscaped yards, proud of their street and their subdivision. Here is a person that goes in and cements a front yard, puts angular parking with parking curbs, and has it filled with automobiles. 7 and 8 automobiles. I got up for 30 days in a row and took pictures for the city, for the parish attorney, to back up this. And, you know, the young families in the neighborhood were quite upset. I ask anybody out there listening to this, wherever you live, would you like to have a yard next door to you filled with automobiles day and night? And I have nothing against college kids. I was one myself at one time. You know, I love college kids, but there are places to rent, and it's not going to be where you have 6 and 7 people, not only college kids, but other people, just like the house on East Lakeshore right now.
Well, Myers doesn't own that one, does he?
No.
Okay. But if, let's say your neighbor Steve Covert, if he wanted to put in a parking lot, he could do it, couldn't he?
Steve Covert's a friend of mine, and Steve is up in arms also about the house that is next door to him. That's the one on East Lakeshore Drive. The house next door to Steve is the one I'm talking about over there. And Steve's not happy with that. All that does is hurts Steve's value on his house. All he's right. planning on selling it. People come by to look at that house wanting to buy it, and they see a parking lot next door. It's kind of a deterrent.
All right. Well, I think you've gotten to the root of this, Paul. This is all about diminishing property value, isn't it? Isn't that the real issue here?
Well, that's part of it, but it's also diminishing the way of life that people that buy homes in respectable neighborhoods expect to have. Would you like to have next to your house on Park Boulevard, somebody come in and cement the whole front yard, and all of a sudden it turns into something that's commercial-looking instead of nice residential, Jim?
Well, sometimes you got to give a little. You know, they made my corner where I live a bus stop. It's a cat's bus stop now. Now, some people would get upset about that, but I go out and greet the people as they're getting on the bus and kind of enjoy.
That's a little bit different than a parking lot.
Okay.
Next to you, because they have bus stops all over Baton Rouge.
Well, would you like a bus stop on Morning Glory, Paul?
That would not affect me. There's a lot of traffic on Morning Glory. If they had a bus coming up and down Morning Glory, you know, it wouldn't bother me.
Okay. Leslie Todd writes, I can understand wanting to keep groups like criminal gangs out of rental homes, but what about streets like Jennifer Jean, populated by unrelated students? What is the true intent of this law? Is this more a matter of too many cars or a matter of too many unrelated people? Is Mr. Nakan aware that more people now cohabit than are married?
Well, I am not familiar with what goes on Jennifer Jean. I know that there are areas around LSU that are zoned, you know, for rentals and so forth, so I can't answer on what's going on at Jennifer Jean. All I can do is say what A1 was set up for and what 99% of the population that owns homes in nice subdivisions expected when they built and bought a house and what they expect now.
Gene in Plaquemine. Gene, good morning. You're on with Paul Nakan.
Yes, I do have a question. I'm listening to these issues, and I'm just wondering if you don't believe that, isn't this the kind of thing that most neighborhood covenants address in terms of protecting your property value? Why should the city have to make laws that protect property values?
Paul?
Well, the city made a ruling, a law, on A1 single family. They made rulings on C1 commercial district, on C2. All of these were set up by government agencies to protect the subdivisions, to protect everything else that goes on as far as development. You develop certain things in certain areas.
297-5633, Paul Nockan, who I must say has bravely put his name, his reputation, and his livelihood out there. He's a business person, and there's some people who might feel as strongly as he does who would never go to the lengths he has. I'm not sure the city parish would have fought this as vigorously as it did without you coaxing them. You were at the city parish office quite often, weren't you?
Well, I got tired of what was going on, especially in our neighborhood, and seeing what was going on in other neighborhoods, and I went to see the parish attorney. Told him we were tired of it. She told me, well, we'd have to have photographs for 2 weeks in a row to prove, every morning for 2 weeks in a row to prove that these people were living there and not just visiting. Well, I got up for 30 days in a row, had the pictures developed each day, got receipts to show it was all done consecutively in 30 days, took it to her. I said, ma'am, Mary Roper, I want you to go ahead, let's file a suit to protect A1 single-family subdivisions in the state of Louisiana. She did so, and then Myers, you know, of course, filed the suit that A1 single-families subdivisions are unconstitutional. Well, the United States Supreme Court says it is, so our Supreme Court here in Louisiana also said that A1 single-family is very constitutional. It's just something that's put forth to show that you can have commercial here, residential here, apartments here, this here, this there.
Justice Knoll, in a dissenting view from the Supreme Court, says under the right factual scenario and with the properly aligned interest, the line drawn by the ordinance would fail to withstand constitutional scrutiny. Is there clearly more logical, rational, and reasonable means of accomplishing the stated goals? Logan in South Downs. Logan, you're on the air with Paul Nockan.
Mr. Nockan, the language of your argument seems to be entirely classist. I'm wondering what exactly is a respectable, quote-unquote, neighborhood, and what qualifications does someone have to meet to live in your so-called respectable neighborhoods? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Well, I mean, just like everybody, I'm repeating myself on this show, everybody wants to live in a nice neighborhood. If you took a poll in Jefferson Place or Bocage or University Gardens or anywhere and asked people, why did you choose to live here? We chose to live here because it's a nice neighborhood. You know, nice homes, well-kept yards, nice families, and so forth. So that's my answer.
Okay. Joshua writes, regarding the issue with 1977 Cherrydale, is the issue more about the property having unattractive parking pads, or are there, or that there are unrelated persons living together? What if the renters did not have any cars that were parked in front? Would you be okay with that, Paul?
People are starting to nitpick. No, I wouldn't be, and that wouldn't happen to start with. And the rule says how many people can live in the house, whether they have cars or not. But cars are definitely an issue when you have so many people living, you know, in a house, and you drive down the street, and all of a sudden, oh, nice residential area, and here's a commercial parking lot.
Kate on Zealand. Kate, good morning. You're on the air with Paul.
Hi, Paul. I was just curious. I understand the idea of wanting a nice neighborhood. I am actually in veterinary school, and I live in a wonderful residential neighborhood by myself in an apartment, which is kind of random for the neighborhood. However, I'm curious, you know, who deserves to have a parking lot next to them. I certainly don't want one either, but I am a student, and I, you know, I'm not in the family. I just live by myself. And so I'm just curious why one class of person would not be allotted a parking lot because it's unideal, while another neighborhood would. And I'll take my answer after here.
I'm not sure I completely understood that. I don't think anybody that lives in a nice neighborhood wants to have a parking lot in their front yard next to where they live. And this is one thing. And, you know, everybody keeps saying, oh, Paul, you won. I don't feel that I won. I feel that people in A1 single-family subdivisions have won by this decision, not just Paul and I can.
Okay. Here's a question from Roger asking if Steve Myers has taken down those Section 8 signs. Are they still in the neighborhood?
He's got one on Cherrydale. He had one over on Morning Glory, but the girls that live in the house were getting all kind of calls and inquiries, and they asked him to take it down. But, you know, this combative thing of Myers, you know, is just, you know, ridiculous. But that's Steve Myers for you, you know. He's mad because somebody has gone after protecting A1 single-family subdivisions. So he is just trying to do whatever he can do, I guess, to retaliate and say, well, I'm going to go ahead and do whatever I want to do.
Steve put his money where his mouth was. I think he spent well over $100,000 in legal fees on this case with his attorney, Wade Shouse, and he lost.
He shouldn't have thought it because I think he should have known that, you know, he was going against city rules and regulations.
Well, if he had had another attorney, would he have done better? Do you think he got good representation?
I have no earthly idea.
Well, you were there in the courtroom, Paul. You were in the courtroom.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't know. I mean, they were arguing something that is against the law, so I don't know what attorney would have done better.
Well, I heard that Shouse put up a very good defense of Myers' case, but the Supreme Court may have had its mind. They may have had their mind made up before. Sometimes that's the way it is.
Well, they wanted to back up the laws that are on the book.
Okay, B on Zealand says, wouldn't it be better to make a better ordinance about the appearance of rental properties and the behavior of tenants and enforce existing parking and noise ordinances instead of discriminating against non-traditional families. I'm all for keeping neighborhoods nice, neat, and respectable, but this doesn't seem like the best way to go about it. Does she have a point?
Well, it's been the best way to go about it all over the United States for decades and decades. And we are going to get the city to start enforcing what's on the books and the rentals in all these areas.
Well, are you going to celebrate tonight, Paul?
I did last night after I got the Supreme Court information saying that
a wild party on Morning Glory last night?
Oh, no, very quiet. My wife and I had a nice dinner. I had a martini. She had a glass of wine, and we, normal day at home.
Well, we thank you for your time, and certainly you have fought the fight, and you've got your right to savor victory. Thank you, Paul Nakhan.
Okay, Jim.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. See you soon. Bye-bye. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Back after this brief timeout on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. And we had been scheduled to talk a bit about the legislative session, and we'll make it an abbreviated discussion since Paul Nakhan's case took precedent. But yesterday, in a follow-up to a visit on this show earlier in the week, Ben Nevers scored victory as the Senate Health and Welfare Committee voted for his America Next copy of Governor Jindal's option to Obamacare. And this legislation may very well end up having support from the administration. Kathy Kleber, the Secretary of Health, called the America Next plan a conservative alternative to the Affordable Care Act, and Ben Nevers is hopeful the state can retrieve money that it bypassed by rejecting the Medicaid expansion, and we shall see where this goes. But this is a new development in the final month of the session that could have some traction, and we shall follow it. Also, the same panel, the Health and Welfare Committee, yesterday advanced legislation putting new restrictions on Louisiana abortion clinic operations. This is similar to the bill that led to Texas clinic shutdowns, House Bill 388, sponsored by Katrina Jackson, the chair of the Black Caucus would require physicians who perform abortions to have active admitting privileges at a hospital that provides these services or as gynecological services within 30 miles of the place where the abortion is performed. And this one obviously will get national attention if it goes the distance. And at this point, it appears the momentum is such that it may very well pass, and Governor Jindal is likely to sign the legislation. So we shall follow it, with the session now 4 weeks away from the finish line. In studio now is a gentleman involved with the Louisiana International Film Festival, and we've been talking about it in the last few days on this show. And this is D-Day. Starting today, May 8th, the Louisiana International Film Festival at Cinema at Perkins Row. And with us is a gentleman who's worked very closely with Chesley Himesfield to make this event one that not only has relevance to our community, but around the country. And we're joined on late notice by Dan Ireland. Good morning to you, Dan.
Good morning, Jim.
And when I say you've been involved in a very substantial way.
Yeah, from the very beginning, actually last year and this year. And Chesley met me through Jeff Dowd, and I had experience with running the Seattle Film Festival and creating that back in 1976. So when she approached me to join, the amazing team here, I jumped at the chance.
You're the artistic director.
I am. Right.
So when I say this has relevance across the country, you've got some very outstanding productions that are available for public consumption in the next few days.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we worked tirelessly with Ian Burney, our film programmer, and Chesley, myself, and an amazing group of people, and the distributors who believed in us this year, which was really great, because last year was such an impressive debut that, with every festival they look at it and they see what you've done, and then if they like what you've done, you go to another level with film. And we've really tried to do that this year and shape it, too.
Well, I wanted to go over some of the films that will be available. And one is God's Pocket.
Yes.
The last film from Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes, absolutely. Directed by John Slattery of Mad Men, his debut film. The actor that plays in Mad Men. And also starring Christina Hendricks, who's also in Mad Men. And it is such a powerful film. And to have this as one of the last films from the great Philip Seymour Hoffman is really, it's incredible. It's also very kind of sad while you're watching it, knowing he isn't here anymore.
So you've seen it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've seen
every one of them.
Yeah, we've seen every one of them. I mean, we don't program them unless we've seen them and agree.
Well,
I hate surprises.
Venus and Fur from Roman Polanski.
It's like his best film in years. It's so amazing, starring his wife, and it's really sort of a play on Masick's Venus and Furs, and a director looking for the perfect actress, and he's frustrated. And the film opens with this amazing sort of vixen that comes in that more than fulfills the role, shall we say, but it's wonderful.
Okay, and another one that we haven't mentioned, Elsa and Fred, starring Shirley MacLaine, who now is 80 years old, and set in New Orleans.
And a beautiful film with two Academy Award winners, Christopher Plummer and Shirley MacLaine, and right here, and it's a remake of an Argentine film from a few years back. And it's really about finding love when you very least expect it. And, reluctantly, too, might I add, and which really gives it a nice little sort of jab and sting. So as charming and lovely as it is, it's very real. And it's directed by Michael Radford. He's a Brit, and he did 1984, White Mischief, years back. But it's a terrific film. And from Louisiana.
Yeah. New Orleans. And Baton Rouge,
and
we've become a film haven.
I know, it's crazy. It's really amazing because we've really tried to put a lot of Louisiana in the festival this year, and really sort of focusing. This is the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Civil Rights Act, and we really tried to put a lot of what you can call equality into the film, like Freedom Summer, which took place in Mississippi. And that's one of the most powerful documentaries I think I've seen in years. And Anita, about Anita Hill, Doris Payne, which is about the most enigmatic jewel thief at 80 years old you'll ever meet.
When is Anita showing, by the way?
It's on Friday. That's Friday night. That's tomorrow.
It is.
You're right at 5 o'clock. Yeah.
Well, she is a great person in history, whether she is believed or not. The man who wrote the best-selling book, The Real Anita Hill, which was a hatchet job, David Brock has recanted what he wrote in that book. And yes. Clarence Thomas, he was voted U.S. Supreme Court Justice on a 52-48 vote. And by the way, two Democratic U.S. senators from Louisiana, John Breaux and Bennett Johnston, both voted for Justice Thomas.
Wow. Wow. This is
a 52-48 vote.
Wow.
So
talk about
that issue of sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. You've seen the film.
Yes.
Do you believe her?
Yeah, I kind of do. But I think the documentary, I mean, it's so powerful in the way it's shaped. You know, it's always about a filmmaker, how you can shape a documentary. And I came out, well, if I didn't believe her, I thought that there was really great cause to doubt the whole thing.
Well, if you believe her, and you do, and I think a lot of other people do, Justice Thomas be on the high court? Should John Breaux and Bennett Johnston have voted for Justice Clarence Thomas?
I think the answer is pretty evident. It's pretty evident.
And these are two Democrats, by the way, who did this, and they made the deciding votes.
Yeah.
The two Louisiana Democratic U.S. senators.
Pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty amazing. In New York, there was all this controversy when it opened a few weeks ago, and hopefully it gets it down here, too.
Well, we're talking with a gentleman who has seen every film that will be shown. How are the 50 of them?
Count them. And, tomorrow, tonight, we're opening with our amazing Belle. I saw this 6 months ago. 20th Century Fox had it, Fox Searchlight. And what a beautiful film to open with. It's the story of a young African-American, African-American, there I go with my politics, a young black woman who was sired in the 18th century by a father of nobility, and she comes to stay because her mother dies. She's taken from Africa to England by her father and put with his parents. And so it's really about race equality. Mm-hmm. And my God, it's such a beautiful film. And so it's a real signature piece to the festival. And
starting tonight,
the reception's
Dan
at
Ireland
4.
At 4 o'clock.
Yep. And the film is at
Perkins. The reception is where?
It's right in Perkins Row. Okay. The whole festival this year we're holding.
The whole thing is there.
It's right in Perkins Row.
All right. And Dan Ireland is the artistic director. And I had another question. We mentioned this earlier in the week. There is a film about the 1927 flood that afflicted the United States and really hammered Louisiana. It was the focus of John Barry's book, Rising Tide, The Great Flood.
The Great Flood, which is one of the most... Oh, my God. Well, it's all the original footage with music behind it. So it's got its own rhythm, and it's powerful. And the score is just it's unbelievable. And it makes the film feel so modern. Even though you're sitting there watching a flood that took place, you know, like, what, how many decades ago? Well, you know, 80.
If we do the math... 1927, I think that's 87 years.
87 years, there we go.
So it was a long time ago, but it affected Louisiana politics immensely because Huey Long was elected governor
that's
the next year.
Right.
And if not for the flood of 27, he might not have been elected governor.
Wow.
And in 1927, another great Louisianian was born, Edwin Washington Edwards. You've heard of him, haven't you, Dan?
Yes, I have.
Someday there'll be, a documentary about him that will be much better than the reality show was. But But there is a lot of Louisiana on display in the next few days. And this kind of an event doesn't happen in a few days. You really plan all year, don't you?
Oh, yeah, you have to. If you don't, I mean, it's really about seeing the film, trying to get a hold of the distributor, convincing them that your festival's worthy, and then trying to get it and book it. And as I said, between Chesley, myself, and Ian Burney, we have been tirelessly, slavishly trying to get that. Oh, and tomorrow night, might I add, we have the world premiere of a major Hollywood sneak preview, which is going to be one of the biggest films of the summer. I'm not allowed to give out the title. But, I mean, 20th Century Fox believed in us that much that they gave us this film. And for anyone that really wants to see one of the most amazing, heartwarming films and powerful, tomorrow night at 7:15. And we can't tell you the title, but we guarantee you, you will not
this
be
is
disappointed.
Friday night.
Yep.
Now, Friday night, you're also showing 1,000 Times Good Night.
Oh, God, what a great film. Juliette Binoche, if she doesn't get an Academy Award nomination. I know I sound like a...
You sound a little enthusiastic. That's good.
Yeah, I know. I've had a few months to like build this up. So
you really like this one.
1,000 Times Good Night. I think Juliette Binoche, who is one of my favorite actresses and one of the most beautiful women in the world, is so powerful in this as a journalist who... is challenged by her family, and she covers bombings in Afghanistan. She goes where the hot ticket is, and she's an adventurer, and it's brilliant. I also think Calvary with Brendan Gleeson, he's going to get nominated for an Academy Award next year. I'm pretty good with predictions sometimes.
Okay. Sunday, I mentioned that it runs the 8th through the 10th. You've really got a lot of the stuff going on Sunday the 11th. So something Miss Lovely?
Oh, Miss Lovely is from India. And it's our one Indian film. Actually, it's the one film I haven't seen in the festival that Ian saw and when he was doing the Mumbai Film Festival. Mm-hmm. Ian Burney, our film programmer, was also the film programmer in Mumbai, and he brought this in. So that's the one film you've caught me on.
Okay. Have you seen Kidnapped for Christ? It'll be showing at 4:15.
Yes.
That's certainly a riveting title.
It's a riveting little film. Actually, we've just been dealing with a dilemma of trying to get the print here. So,
hopefully the print will not be kidnapped.
No, you know what? You always have that during a film festival when you're dealing with 50 or 60 films. There's inevitably going to be something that happens.
Well, we asked, I asked about the time. Anita's showing at 5 o'clock tomorrow.
Yes.
The Politics of Race, Sex, and Power. 1991. Hard to believe it's been 23 years.
Isn't it?
But it has. And Clarence Thomas has a lifetime appointment. What happened to Anita Hill?
Poor Anita Hill.
Well, she's done okay as a professor, hasn't she?
She's done okay as a professor, and I think that she's probably written a book,
And another one that sounds promising, Gore Vidal, The United States of Amnesia. What is this about?
It's really about Gore Vidal. And anybody that's known Gore Vidal and his work will be amazed.
That's Saturday at 9:30 p.m.
And you know what the beauty of it is? It's that it's got the wit and the provocative nature, and it gets the spirit of Vidal. It captures it beautifully.
Now, it's going to be hard to see all 50 of these films. You mean I got to pick and choose?
Unfortunately, yeah, I know.
Yeah, okay.
That's if we had another 4 or 5 days, we would have been. We tried to put as many in twice as we could, but it's very difficult. I mean, when you have a limited amount of time, and hopefully next year our festival will go to 5 days, 6 days.
So you're thinking bigger?
Oh, come on! You got to think bigger.
Well, Chesley is a person who came here from another place, but she's doing her best to make our community a better place.
She's amazing. She's amazing. When I met her, I loved her energy, and I thought, this is somebody that's got a vision. and that was great.
Well.
And I'm a film director myself, and so I started, even though I started the festival, like in 1976, I went off to a career, and I was lucky enough to give Jessica Chastain her first part and Renee Zellweger the movie that got her Jerry Maguire. So
you've done okay, Dan.
I've done okay, and you know what? Okay. To be able to do this was such a gift. So
well, congratulations, and we'll see you in the films this weekend at the International Film Festival, and we'll strive to get Nina Sankovic, signed, sealed, and delivered her book back soon. She could not make it today. I'm Jim. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.